Okay. Toldos is records by far, if not the hardest, from the hardest stories that we have in the Chumash, based on the premise that we look up to our patriarchs and matriarchs. The type of disagreement and external trickery is unprecedented. I don't think there's a story like this. It's very difficult. The difficulty never goes away. Difficulty is repeated every year. And they certainly had a very deep disagreement, Yitzchak and Rivka, as to what should be done with Esav, which makes the story so potent. Not that we have Esav children, God forbid, but to compare apples to oranges, meaning that within us there's an Esav. Esav represents everything that's bad. And because of that, an extension of us to some degree, from certain perspectives, one can see in one's child a Esav-like character trait. And what do you do with that? Which is a challenge that we all face, unless we're blind and delusional, which is prevalent in where a parent, from their love to their child, from their love to themselves, cannot tolerate that they have a child that's less than perfect. So if it's coming from a narcissistic place, if it's coming from a love to the child, doesn't matter where it's coming from, that's not the case over here. And what I'm sharing now is my understanding of a synopsis of a Maimer from the Alter Rebbe. And this concept is certainly not the standard approach that we have in Hasidus, how to approach something that's negative. So what I'm saying now might be controversial to some degree, even though I don't think it is. And let's get right into it. Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav. And Rivka tricked her husband. And not only that, she colluded, she made her son collude with her against his will. He was very hesitant in going along with her plan, if anything, just for the dishonesty of it. So she dressed him up with the garments that Esav had. She put on his arms animal garments. These are two separate garments. In order for Yitzchak, if he'll be suspicious that who's in front of him is not Esav, a blind man will do what a blind man could do, which is to use the sense of touch, to know, to see. You see with your touch. And in Mamash, that's what happened. Then he touched him and he felt like Esav. And you read these verses. And at right before the blessing, the Maimer is based on these words. Yitzchak says to whom he thought was Esav, but was Yaakov, Vayomer, Re'ei. How ironic, a blind man, Re'ei. Re'ei Re'ach B'ni. I see that the scent from you, my son, you don't exactly see a scent, but especially for someone who's blind that lost the physical seeing, so you is a convolution. There's a mystical experience sometimes that you can see with your touch. So he saw a scent instead of smelling the scent. Re'ei Re'ach B'ni, that the scent of you, my son, is Kereach Sada, is like the scent of the field that is blessed by God. Just to know the pshat, the field that's blessed by God is one of the names we give for Gan Eden. Gan Eden is field-like. Yitzchak, after the Akedah, saying words that I have no understanding of these words, but Yitzchak for 3 years went to Gan Eden. When he returned, he was 40. But for the people that did not go there, those 3 years did not yet go by. Which is a Rashi for people who learn Chitas. There's some discrepancy. Some years got lost, and the solution for that is that he aged quicker. The people that were left behind aged slower. How amazing is that? When you are in Gan Eden, when a person is in a very pleasurable state, time goes by very quick. So there was that type of mamish, different time experience between Yitzchak and everyone else. Yitzchak knew Gan Eden, not the way we know Gan Eden prior and post of the life that we have, but he actually experienced during his life, he had a break, he went to Gan Eden, and he remembered the scent, and Yitzchak says, I'm smelling the scent of Gan Eden. That's what he told Yaakov, thinking he's Esav. And the Alter Rebbe from this springboards into a whole Torah that I'm going to share in a moment. But just the contrast of that is that the moment he finished blessing Yaakov, thinking he's Esav, Vayehi ach yotzo yotzo Yaakov. Right, Yaakov left. This is God is, you see the hand of Hashem. And at that same moment, somehow they didn't see each other. But it was a moment. Yaakov leaves. Esav enters, coming with the food that he was asked to prepare. After Yaakov came with the food that Yitzchak asked to prepare. So vayomer lo Yitzchak, Aviv, Yitzchak told him, Mi ata, who are you? It was weird for a blind person. Vayomer, and he responded, Ani bincha b'chorecha Esav, I am your firstborn son Esav. The Torah does something that happens, but rare, that the Torah records a feeling. It's not common. We have it. Vayecharad Yitzchak charada gedoyla ad mo'oid. That Yitzchak had a charada, big, a lot. So maza charada. So Rashi brings two interpretations. Either charada means he was confused. Didn't make sense. He was just with the son. He just blessed Esav. Why is Esav returning? Repeat. It's very confusing, especially for people that can't see. So when you're doubting yourself, when we doubt, which we all do, just to know in what or in how many areas, when you doubt yourself and you finally start to give yourself a bissel more confidence, no, it's not as bad as I used to be. I think I'm getting better. If someone figures out how to press there, it's very disorienting. Oh my God, I'm the same gullible whatever that I always used to be, which is horrible. And I'm gonna pay the price for that. That's one pshat. And the second pshat is that at this moment he sensed the smell of Gehenna. In contrast to when now knowing Yaakov's entrance brought with him the scent of Gan Eden, he sensed the smell of Gehenna. And he was overcome with fear.
How do you know that it was a smell of Gehenna?
So that's a great question. I would say like this, whatever Gan Eden smells like, did anyone have an experience of smelling something and chapping that this smell is the opposite of something else? Did you ever had that experience? Curious. I can say on the side that by divine providence, I had a perfume store for 3 years. And what really worked, and it really worked, is that if you just want to simplify, sweet, spicy smells always work. If someone gave the ruach of a sweeter person, you would give them a spicy and they would buy it. The opposites. In other words, opposites definitely help. We said if you cannot know one thing if you don't know what's opposites. I'm talking about knowing. Not knowing, but experiencing the opposite. You can't. If you don't have the opposite, so somehow it was the opposite smell. I think think it's a very deep awareness to be able to know that this is opposite that. But that, in other words, what I'm telling you is that he was never in Gehenna. But somehow, when you really know something, imbued in that knowledge has to be the knowledge of the opposite. I will say that kindness and cruelty, I know because I experience both. But I can mamish, I can identify what cruelty is opposite what kindness. Or sanity and insanity, because I have both. I'm not special. You guys also have both. You're sane and insane. But imagine, Gan Eden and Gehenna. So he knew Gehenna by knowing Gan Eden. And it almost gives you the understanding that this was the first time that he experienced Gehenna with Esav. And I'm going to just go straight into the Maimer, what the Alter Rebbe wants to convey, certainly what he wants to convey in the Maimer, is that make no mistake, Yitzchak knew who Esav was. That's for sure what he's saying. It wasn't that Yitzchak had a misunderstanding about who Esav is. That's not what happened. Even though one could come to that conclusion. Yitzchak knew who he was, and there was a machloikas between him and Rivka as to how does one deal with it. And ultimately what I'm coming to is that they are both right. At that time, her approach was right. At other times, Yitzchak's approach has to be right. You can't have a machloikas between two people of this caliber and one is wrong and right. It's not about wrong and right, but it's really understanding the two perspectives. And again, the way I'm going to try to understand it, it's very relatable. But let me just go a little bit into the Hasidus over here and to become familiar with the words. A lot of them are already in Tanya. I'm speaking about big. Big is not good. But we're going to speak about big. There's Kedusha and Klipa. Big words. Holiness and Klipa. How would you translate Klipa? Klipa means a shell. Klipa means unholiness. Klipa is the source of everything that's bad. And the Alter Rebbe, many a time, he says a one-liner that we don't appreciate, most of us, because we didn't suffer to try to figure it out for then finally for you to hear the right answer and to have the joy of hearing the right answer. I remember when I was young, someone told me that the problem with you guys, he meant the Lubavitcher boys, someone I'm of Tzayim, is that you have all the answers before you have the questions. And that was such a good, I understood it then as a 15-year-old, and I understand it now, and I'm going to still understand it, God willing, if I'll be alive in 50 years. That's such a good statement. Because you can only understand something if first you were in the dark, you didn't know. And then, and you're trying, and you're missing, and then when you get the answer, the pleasure that it gives you is gewaldic. When you get the answer, the emes answer right away without working for it, it's like giving $1 billion to a kid. Like the Alter Rebbe says, what's truth? How do you define truth? That which doesn't change. This answer is so deep and so profound and so enlightened. But when I heard it then, and to some level now, I'm not appreciating that enough. Because to appreciate it, you have to really try to define in few words, what is truth? And by the way, that goes to anything. If you want to know whether you really understand something, define it in a few words, your words, and you're going to see how hard it will be. And it's gewaldic. And we have a gift. Emes is that which does not change. What is Klipa? In a few words. And I'm going to make you guys sweat a little bit. And I'm doing this to me because I'm in the same pot. I never schwitzed enough to appreciate enough this that Hasidus gives us. The Alter Rebbe gives in two words what's Klipa.
You say everything else.
Huh?
Everything else.
What does that mean?
Everything else. Everything. There's things that never change, and then there's everything else. So Klipa is everything else.
Uh huh. Give me a positive definition, not a negative definition.
If it's essentially removable, it's not consistent, a constant, so it has that.
Okay.
Or that which changes.
It can be changed or removed.
That which changes, according to the Alter Rebbe, I'm coming back, would be Sheket.
Okay.
Not Klipa.
What's the difference between Klipa and
Sheker? Sheker is a certain flavor of Klipa. Klipa is the broadest brush of it's Klipa. It's not holy.
Well, Rabbi, I'm not sweating, but if I had to think of a Hasidic answer, the Hasidic answer for what's Klipa is probably going to be the same thing as what's MS, is that which doesn't change. Like
no, but it's not. Okay, but it's not.
Okay.
And what I'm saying right now, the Alter Rebbe doesn't write often. Hmm. It came when in this Maimer, this is Klipa. Go for it.
Division.
Division, okay.
That can't be reconciled.
Division that cannot be reconciled. Very nice. Okay.
Everything that takes your peace of mind away, something that doesn't resonate, you know, that some form of disconnect.
Inside. Division that cannot be reconciled, okay.
Your shadow.
Okay.
But then doesn't that become more Sitra Achra, shadow?
Correct.
Okay.
In this context of what I'm going to share, I don't know if Klipa and Sitra Achra have two different definitions. I don't know.
So is it pulling the power from the opposite side of truth?
Oh, we're getting warm. Faggy.
It's always translated as a shell, but it seems like something good. Of no substance, maybe? Like okay. There's nothing.
Okay, good. Also getting warm.
No, lies.
Huh?
Lies.
Okay, check it. I mean, okay. I don't think anyone's statement is wrong. I'm just saying that, like, when I try to get my own words.
How about no power of its own?
Okay. Okay, now you get even closer. Mm-hmm. 1 second. I don't know what the definition is, but when I see the person, I know that's Klipa. And I'm not going to say the name for the recording. That I know somehow. Oh, that does it does.
An energy that wants to survive needs to have a host of something holy.
Ooh.
Okay, we're getting there.
Like a parasite.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
Die, Rabbi knew.
He writes, Mamash, one word. Actually, it's one word in English. Klipa is an ingrate. Ingrate means someone who is in denial that what they have was gifted to them by something greater than them. But there are many, many steps to better unpackage it. Like someone just mentioned, something that has no substance on its own. The emes is that other than God, nothing is on their own. Everything is only because Hashem is making it. The only being that is with real substance is Hashem. But we don't say that if it's not God, it's Klipa. We don't say that. It can be not Hashem, and it can be Kedusha. This Sefer is holy. This Chumash is not God. So what would make something holy, according to this, the opposite? A thing, a being that is acknowledging that I am because I'm being made by Hashem. Minimally, what I have was gifted to me, which is our truth. We didn't make ourselves. And what we have, this doesn't take away our accomplishments at all. It enhances it. In other words, we have to own the choices that we make. Owning it is not klipa because it was my choice. But other than my choices, everything that I have, everything, my neshama, the ikir, my physical, everything was given to me. I can say these words. How do I know if I mean these words? If I'm grateful.
You can't be grateful for something that was given to you.
I,
you can't be ungrateful for something that was given
to you. If I am saying that I acknowledge that you gave me something, but I don't feel gratefulness for the fact that you gave it to me, something good. If I don't feel gratefulness, is a proof that I'm just saying the words I'm grateful. I'm saying the words that I acknowledge, but I don't acknowledge.
Someone gave you a big bag of poop.
They gave
it to you.
Correct. I'm talking about something good. Something good. Something good. Let's begin with my life. Let's begin with life.
Sometimes all life doesn't feel good.
I'm talking about the moments that my life feels good. Okay. You're right. I'm not going into that. I'm going into, to some level, the challenge we have with teenagers, which we were, and we still have within us, is that they, because of their need of detaching, there's a need for that, is that they will be very ungrateful. The frustration that older people might feel is that there's so much that I'm giving you, even though there's so much bad that I'm giving you, but there's so much good that I'm giving you. Why? It's like going over you. That comes from klipa. That's the definition of this mimer. Klipa knows nothing has substance other than Hashem, real substance. But if something is receiving from God, but it doesn't only have to be Hashem. If someone is acknowledging whatever it is that I was given, whatever good that I was given in my understanding, if I am able to experience the feeling of gratefulness, that is Kedusha. I become elevated and part of God when I acknowledge that I am a recipient of God's kindness. And I agree with what you're saying. I am not talking about me having to see the good in everything. I'm talking about in that which I do see good. Klipa would mean that I am in denial in my experience, not in my words. I'm denying that I'm really getting it. The greatness of this definition is that nothing is pure klipa. But look inside yourself. How much of my life do I have a hard time giving credit where credit is due? A lot. That's my klipa. Wherever it comes easy, I'm speaking about myself. If someone over here doesn't have that experience, good for you. Then this klipa you don't have. But there are so many times that you have something and I'm giving myself too much credit. If I'm giving myself credit where it's not due, I'm really taking away credit from where credit is due. That ability of denying that I'm a recipient, I'm denying it. I'm not looking at that. I don't want to see that. That is how he defines klipa. Now bring this to Hashem. It doesn't have to begin with God, but it's going to have to end up with, because really it's all about Hashem. If someone is grateful to God, that person, according to this definition, is a holy person. They're not a tzaddik. They could be. It doesn't mean you have to be a tzaddik. It doesn't mean you're never going to act out. But that's a holy person. A society that's in acknowledgement. We begin with words. So no, we begin a letter. We write Baruch Hashem or Be'ezras Hashem. We at least begin verbally. We thank God. We begin our day by thanking God. And hopefully if some of this will become more real, then I'm more open to the holiness that's already within me and in the holiness to the world. And my block begins, like the core of the block is denial to the truth of this part, that what I have is not mine. What I have is a gift. And if I were to experience it as a gift, I would be grateful. The reason why gratefulness is so healing, I'm just using religious words, is because gratefulness allows God in. And the lack of being grateful is the way that I'm blocking. Klipa is a block, it's a show. If I want to block God out, just be an ingrate. If your child is not grateful to you, you know what they're blocking? They're blocking you. And they want to block you, not you, me. So what do? They have to just deny whatever it is, the little good that we do, they have to deny that. Because they want to block it all. Okay.
So arrogance?
Why would someone want to block it? It could come from arrogance.
But it's
I'm sure it could come from other reasons. It can come from anger. Anger is not arrogance. Because if someone is angry at the parent or angry at God, so to say, so I don't want to be grateful towards you when I'm angry at you. But what's the klipa part of it? The klipa, you know, it's what's motivating me to be ungrateful can be many reasons. But the I don't think it has to only come from arrogance. I don't think it's exclusive to arrogance. But this nukud, the klipa, is denying, I'm saying ingrate. That's the word, ingrate.
What are other reasons?
One second. I hold your thought. I don't want to go off. I want to go on a certain path over here and hold that question. I think that's a great topic to explore, to understand why. Now, from the perspective of God, how is it even possible? How is it possible for you to give and for the recipient to deny? How is that possible? How does that work? Not why do they do it. How could they do it? The Alter Rebbe gives four reasons. And really, it can be one of the four, probably in most cases, all of the four in different variations. The first is that God really is not that tangible. Speaking about God now. God or godliness has many levels to it. And the emphasis is that there are some levels of godliness that's close, but there are some levels of godliness that's very distant from us. It's aloof. It's called makif. So it's harder for me to deny something that's in my face. In English, they say out of sight, out of mind, or out of mind, out of whatever the expression is. In other words, Hashem is not out of sight, out of mind. So Hashem is not out of sight. So when it comes to Hashem, I'm speaking about Hashem now, that's the first reason that one could deny for whatever reason. Because God is too distant. And that's going to be connected to scent, as we'll get back to. That's the scent. The second reason is because what God gives, He gives with a tzimtzum. That means He gives it in a limited way. Which would mean that if what you are getting from God is going to start coming with tremendous abundance, it's going to be a lot harder to deny that He's giving it to you. Hold that thought. These two thoughts is the main part of the mimer. I'm saying there are other, just to know, there are other, I'll leave the other two. There are another two reasons. And Tanya, why? How is it possible for Klipa to deny that it's getting from God? I'm not talking about denying, feeling, understanding. Hashem is aloof. Hashem is makif. And also what God gives is limited. And if it's limited, a person can say, oh, that's just innate. It's natural. That's why when a miracle happens, at least for a short amount of time, it's much harder to deny God. All of us. We cannot not be thinking about Hashem, but if something happened that we knew it was too coincidental, and the greater the miracle, at the moment of the miracle, we experience real gratefulness, like mamash grateful. Because you see it, because it wasn't so makif anymore. Like it's like God revealed Himself when He made the miracles in the Chumash. Like a biblical miracle shouldn't have been this way. Even if it remains makif, if it keeps on happening good and good and good and good and good, just like by bad and bad and bad and bad, many people that suffer a lot, they say there has to be a God. There's someone picking on me. I heard that. Because, same thing in the good. It's the same thing. In other words, there's the norm, whatever we consider the norm, and at some point, okay, so based on that, what does one do? Let's go. One has a child, and the child is an ingrate. And I'm not talking about a parent who's coming from the ego parent. How can you not acknowledge me? Do you know how much I am doing for you? I'm not talking that. I'm talking it's not good for a child. It's not good for any of us to be in denial from the fact that a lot of in our lives, a lot more than we think, was gifted to us. It's emes. And it makes a person humble. That's what you were saying, arrogance. An arrogant person will have a harder time being grateful because I want to take the credit to me. So it is so, and it's not good for me to be an ingrate. It's not good for our child. Ideal. So if a parent is coming from that perspective. I really don't want the child to be living in this cut-off place from the truth or from the parent. But they are in denial that you're helping them. What is your solution?
Take a step back.
I'm using my words. That was the machlekes between Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak's solution was, give the child so much good. Until they'll have no choice but to be grateful. That's a strategy. Let's leave that whole thing out because we really misunderstand Gevurah. That's a Gevuradik way of resolving Esav. It's also Gevurah. You're forcing. You want to live in denial. I'm not letting you be in denial. I'm going to give you so much good that you're going to have to at some point acknowledge, thank you. Maybe, but no thank you. Don't do me any favors. I can be good without you, but at least thank you.
Is it sarcastic?
It's not sarcastic.
It's still strong arming, though.
It's strong arming.
But it didn't work.
Well, no, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. Don't say it didn't work. One second.
Yitzchak and Rivka each do.
Oh, they had a different approach.
Right.
First of all, what I'm saying right now is not controversial at all yet. This is mamish what the Alter Rebbe says. It's gevaldik. Yitzchak knew who Esav was.
Right.
But then he goes into another nuance. The other nuance is that for someone, for being that God is makif, that means that God at that point in history, and up until now, we don't see God. Later, things will change. Somehow, we're going to change. We're going to see things differently. So God remains makif. So even if makif will be giving and giving and giving, a person has to become sensitized towards makif. Makif means that there are certain energies that we can interact with in a way that when we interact with them, we internalize them. L'mashal, food. There are nutrients in food. When I eat food, what happens? There is an interaction. Actually, the food goes inside of me. And I break it down. And I start to work with it. And by the way, not all of it is good. So you have to expel the bad. You have to integrate the good. But this is an interaction in which there is an interaction. You cannot interact with makif. You cannot integrate makif. Makif means there are certain energies that remain aloof from all of us. And since I cannot interact with us, the easiest way of dealing with it is to ignore it. I'm going to give you words. Every person has a halo that goes around them. Every person has a ruach that goes with them. The Arizal was the master of that. It's like a halo. He would see it and he would know you from it. We all have that potential to some level. But we don't develop it because there's nothing I can do with your halo. I can't talk to it. I cannot interact with it in a hislapsus way, in an integral. I cannot integrate it. If I would be able to integrate that which is aloof, it would no longer be aloof.
So you could draw it down, but at that point,
I can have the example of the max that you get to do with makif scent. Unlike food that actually nourishes you, the scent also, it goes inside your nose. It's not like you don't take it in. It's not going to nourish you. And you're picking up something that's not tangible, but you become aware of it. It smells good, it smells bad.
Is that being perceptive? Someone's like an...
I would say that from what the Goyim call the five senses, al pi Kabbalah, we have 12 senses. But from however many senses we have, the highest one is the sense of smell in the physical world. It's still something physical. You can measure it, just like you can measure sound, not with your eyes, but it's a measurable. Scent is something that could be measured. But it represents the benefits and the deficiency of me and makif. It's something so fleeting, scent.
Okay.
So what Yitzchak wanted to do, Yitzchak knew who Esav was. Yitzchak felt that the problem, the core is Klipa. The core of Klipa is, let's go to the root. The root of Klipa is because Yitzchak was unable to acknowledge that everything that he has is a gift from God. He had a problem with that. He was ungrateful to God. Yitzchak was grateful to his father. Make no mistake. And we're speaking about not Yitzchak, the physical person, who Esav represents in these Maimarim. He represents Klipa, the Koyach, the fact that in this world there is the possibility of someone or something receiving from God and denying there is a God. So what do you do? Tell God, give it more. But God, one second. But God is not extending its hand to give. See, if I give something to you, you'll see me giving it to you. Even when a miracle happens and happens and happens. So what's needed prior to the Ve'yitan, Ve'yachzer Ve'yitan, you learn all of these Rashi's, like it was the biggest blessing. It was like a blessing of everything. Begashmias, Beruchnias, everything was in that blessing. Like abundance, in abundance, in abundance. Prior to that, we have to sensitize Esav to Reach. And you know what happens? And I can say this by me, and I'm sure I'm not alone. After COVID, if I don't make an effort to smell, I don't smell. But thank God, if I say, oh, someone tells me there's a good smell or a bad smell, I have to take another sniff. And then this is a blessing. I'm grateful to God for that, because it's advantageous also. You only have it if you want it. If you don't want it, it's a bracha for me, and I'm grateful. So first, he began to speak to him. First of all, Yitzchak smelled Gan Eden. It happened to be Yaakov. It doesn't matter. But when he smelled something, when you tell a person, try this right now, you see that person, there's a very special halo around that person. Not to say sheket. If you see that, I think if you see it in someone and you tell it to your friend, I think they'll see some of what you're seeing. And if you wouldn't have mentioned it to them, they're not there. Their mind is not focused on the not seeable. And even in scent on some level. So he made a mention, he mentioned that to make whoever's in front of him, even though he thought it's Yaakov, but deep down, some part of him knew it's Esav. He wanted Esav to be open to Reach, become more sensitive to Reach. People that are sensitive to scent.
Deep down inside he knew it was Esau. I thought you said deep down inside he knew it was Yaakov.
No, deep down he was. I'm sorry. Okay. Deep down inside, he knew it was Yaakov, but he thought it was Esau. I take that. But you know, from the perspective that it was Esau, he wanted Esau to become sensitized to scent. I think that people that are involved in the business of scent, in any way, aromatherapy or. They develop a certain ruchnias that you develop something more spiritual, not tangible. You develop it like any other chush. It's not a tangible. And once a person is not focused only on the tangible, and on top of that, Hashem gives them brachos and brachos ad bli day, without end. That was Yitzchak's way of getting Esav to turn and to say, God, I acknowledge you. And I thank you, and I'm grateful to you. And that would have been the way he would have resolved. Now, what's wrong with that strategy? Now, I'm giving my own mashal. And with the preface, that one of the foundations of the teachings of Hasidus is that we are meant to focus on light, and light expels darkness. And that stands. Everything that I'm going to share now is not in contradiction at all. It just works together. That's the ikir. Light pushes away darkness. And my example of light pushes away darkness in this context, I know it's a bad example, but it's a great example. There's something called a French bath. What's a French bath? I'm speaking from the men's sect. French bath means that some cultures have a minig that they don't bathe. So they smell bad. So what do? On top of their bad smell, they put perfume. What's the kavana? That my good smell will so outweigh the bad smell that I'm going to cover up the bad smell. I'm going to use this as a mashal, that if the strategy, someone has darkness, they have klipa, they're an ingrate. If the solution is give them so much good for them to be grateful, it's a French bath. Why is it a French bath? Because, yeah, when they are getting all of that good at that moment, you didn't inherently challenge their darkness by going on your path. Why are you that way? And then you open up a whole Pandora's box. And every person has a unique reason. And then you have to go into that. And you have to go into that until finally you begin to do the avoda of some of it is good. There's always some good. Let's find the good. Let's incorporate the good. And let's get rid of the bad. That's a very difficult avoda. That's a very difficult avoda. It's almost like the beginner. The easy way out is bombard them with kindness. And that's the way, in my understanding, why Rivka told Yitzchak that it's a solution, but it's not a solution. In other words, you have to confront Esav. There has to be a confrontation. Esav has to look at himself. He, not because God is giving him so many blessings, so he's inspired to do tshuva. No, don't inspire him to do tshuva. Hit rock bottom. Go with, be an ingrate. See where it's going to get you. And it can take many, many generations. But at some point, it will not work because it's sheker. You can't live in a lie. Whoever lives in a lie, sooner or later, the lie becomes something will be checkmated. It's going to collapse. And when it collapses, there is Gehenim to pay. So it's amazing, according to this, that after Rivka got her, so that's the machli. So what does Rivka say? No, we have a problem with klipa. Esav has klipa in him. If you're going to give him all of these blessings, it's a band-aid. Esav, the person, will become grateful. Yitzchak was not wrong, but it doesn't resolve the klipa. That means that if theoretically all the good will be taken away, then nothing changed. The klipa did not change. The darkness was not touched. French bath. By the way, I give a mashal of a French bath because if you have a good nose, if you develop your chush of scent, then it's the worst thing, a French bath, because you end up smelling the good and the bad, and it's better just stink, in my opinion. I mean, clear, confusing. That's the thing. You got to do both.
Because actually, it attracts you more to the bad smell. You end up smelling the good.
There's so much toit on this. Just on the side that we have in the Beis Hamikdash, we have the ketoitus, and in the ketoitus there were 11 ingredients. And the kasha normally is, how can you have 11 ingredients? Normally kedusha is 10. Normally 11 is klipa. So Hasidus says, you're right. 11 is klipa, but 10 and 1 is holy and super holy. So the ketoitus is not 11; it's 10 and 1. So you see. Now one second, which one is the one? So there's a whole, there's a dynamic. In some Maimonim, the one is the incense called frankincense, Levoina. Levoina is white, Levoina is pure, Levoina is Zaka. Levoina represents Tzadikim. So it's like the ten and the Tzadik. In other Maimonim, no, Chelbana. Chelbana is a scent that has a horrible smell. But if you mix the Chelbana with the other ingredients, it's not proportional. The chelbana was a fifth of everything, even though there were 11 ingredients. But if you get those proportions exact, in the mixture, the chelbana is transformed to something good.
Is it the same as
chilba? Huh?
Is it the same as chilba? Like fenugreek?
I don't know. Not fenugreek.
Okay, okay.
No. Okay. Chelbana is some fenugreek does not smell bad. Maybe it smells strong. Chelbana, I forgot what it's called in English. You can Google it. Chelbana smells horrible. It's an amazing thing. Chelbana represents klipa becoming kedusha, but not by the avoida of Yitzchak, by the avoida of Rivka. What's the avoida of Rivka? Go confront Esav. Esav has to realize. Esav, how does klipa resolve itself? Use these words. Not confronting from without. How does evil confront itself? Minimally, when it's the recipient of its own evil, or when it perpetrates something, if that exact thing happens to him or to her, for them to have an experience of how horrible it is to be the way they are, on the recipient's end. No doubt that the trickery that was done, I'm not talking about from Yitzchak. I'm talking about Esav's experience. He was tricked. A hunter, Esav is called a hunter, in before represents the power of tricking. Because an animal doesn't want to get the hunter down. A hunter has to set a trap. You trick it. You think you're good, and boom, and you get your head cut off. For Esav to begin a process in which he looks at himself and he says, "Oh my God, the way I am is horrible." What did he need? He needed to be tricked. So Yitzchak says, "Let's bombard him with love." Rivka says, "Let's give him an experience of him."
But can't you give him an experience of him with a mirror, not with a trick? Like a mirror is just seeing reality, not tricking.
That's exactly what she did. When you say the word mirror, if you think he never looked in the mirror, what do you mean by a mirror? That's called a mirror. He was a trickster.
And he could see his yeshus without being tricked.
You can only... No, his unique darkness was trickery. That was his unique. And for him to begin to see the darkness, like not French bath, see how bad the person smells. When a person finally, people don't smell themselves. You don't even know you smell bad. When you finally, oh my God, this is what I smell like, horrible. Now you begin a process which is a big avoida. It takes a long time. It takes a lifetime. Because when we look at that which we don't want, we all know this. Just because you see it and you don't want it, the more you say you don't want it, the more you're stuck with it. Oh, horrible. Person finally chaps. I'm selfish. I'm narcissistic. I'm arrogant. If they take a minute. So what did they do? I don't want to be this way. Whenever you hear those words, you should know, whoever said those words is now further from getting rid of it. Not closer. How do you, after a lifetime, how are you worthy for God to remove it? By seeing how horrible it is, and by acknowledging is that I cannot get rid of it. This is who I am. That makes it much worse. Because if I can get rid of it, it's not me, it's just my dirty garment. When I see this is so deeply ingrained in me, and it's horrible, and I don't want it. I don't want it, you lost already. Not I don't want it. And I embrace the fact that this is part of who I am right now, as horrible as it is. That breaks the right way. That's the right break. So it's Messiah. Then a person will turn to God and say, "God, help." You'll never turn to God if you think you can get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And we all know this in our own words, but everyone has this experience. When they finally are mature enough to see their flaw, they say, "I don't want this." Shkoyach. And I'm telling you, the more you say that, the farther you are away from getting rid of it. Versus, this is who I am. Not all of me. This is part of who I am. And yes, and it's horrible. It's horrible for me. It's horrible for the people around me. And I cannot get rid of it. I absorbed it already. It's too late. I swallowed the pill. I wasn't born that way, or I was. But at this point, there's no getting rid of it. It's the opposite. But to begin that, he needed to get tricked. So it's mamash in extreme. So what do you do with a child that has something that has to be rectified? Either give them so much love that the light will chase away the darkness, and it will on the superficial. Their darkness will go into hiding. But the person won't live in the hiding. They'll be living in the light. So everything is gonna be functional up until a point. And then Rivka was going to say, no. The parent should figure out how to give the child a taste of their flaw. And don't worry, the parent is God. I don't think we have the capacity to do that. We don't have to manipulate things. But that's what happens to all of us. All of us. It means what will happen to me is I'm going to get an experience of exactly what I do to the people around me. Unless I'm going to be in denial when it happens and be a victim, which is the easiest way, cop out. I'm a victim. Why is this always happening to me? And then there's a big avoida. The avoida of Yitzchak with Esav would have been much quicker. The avoida of Rivka is not finished yet. We're not done yet. The tikkun of Esav is connected to the coming of Mashiach. When Yitzchak wanted to give Esav the brachas, he knew it's not Mashiach. And I would even say that we have to do both. And I think we do it. We should do both. On one hand, we have to give those who we would like to help so much blessing. And that's what happens. You know, let's say a person would want for the children to be observant. If someone were to have that goal, which I do. So you're not going to tell your kid be observant. It doesn't work that way. If your child is connected to you and you're observant, they'll be observant. So all you need to do is you have to make the connection. How do you make the connection? The easiest way, you bribe them, not in a bad way. You give them, you're kind. You're, so then the kid says, wow, that's amazing. I'm connected. I'll be like you. It happens automatically. That's Yitzchak's strategy. And Rivka's strategy is much more thorough, much harder. But Emes, it's the one that happened because this is the end of it all, not the beginning of it all. You begin with light. You end by transforming the dark into the light. That's the end. And this transformation is this avoid. Dark has to first see its dark and taste the bitterness of it. And then realize that it's stuck with the darkness. And that begins a process of God ultimately transforming it. And it's a transformation, which means that some of it has to be used for good. In other words, God created the world in which there can be trickery. Is trickery a good thing or a bad thing? And the correct answer is, as a rule, it's a horrible thing. But there are very few but exceptional places where trickery is a good thing. Where was trickery a good thing? In our story. That's the meaning of the Medrash. The Medrash says that when God made the world, the Nachash tricked Chava. The Nachash tricked however did it. So the Nachash used trickery for bad. The ultimate rectification is for someone to use trickery for good. So Rivka used trickery for good. Now you have to be a godly person to decide that. You have to be very careful with these ideas because that could justify any person who's trying, God forbid, to trick the other of saying, no, I'm using trickery for good. God forbid. But Rivka Imenu, she had the right to do that. She was a tzaddikus. She was not coming with her agenda. So there was another part of that you actually, that's the chelbenah, that you take something that normally is bad, if you find its right place, you finally put it to ease because you can never fully get rid of it. If you can't get rid of it, then let me understand it differently, which would lead me to using it differently. And if I use it in the right setting, then it is good. Then I'm a chay, instead of me running away from whatever it is I see in me that I don't want, adarabba. First see you won't get rid of it, and then see where does it have a right place. That's the whole, and that's the ultimate bracha, the ultimate blessing. It's not about who got the blessing. This is the blessing. This story is the blessing. Giving amazing amount of good. Helping the person become more sensitized to ruchnius. Giving them good. And also, somehow helping them see whatever it is that's not good within them. And that person will struggle forever in getting rid of it and they won't be able to. And at the end, it will be used the right way. And when that happens, that's mamash redemption. That's Mashiach to a person. That means when a person sees in themselves that all of what you have in you, all of it, you just have to know what to do with it. Has a time and a place. There's a time for night and there's a time for day. Instead of fighting dark, there's a time for it. That's mamash the geula pratis.
What's the right way of showing someone without tricking them?
What do you mean by that?
I think you said that give them a lot of love, but then also trying to let them see what they have, but we shouldn't be tricking. So how do you?
Well, at least if you tell them, if you're honest with them, and without tricking is 99.99 never okay. I think you can tell your teenage child that you're having a hard time acknowledging that a lot of what you have in your life is being gifted to you, and I'm going to help you acknowledge it. Here's $1 million. That's not tricking. Here, I'm giving you a gift. First of all, I love you. If it's true, you're not tricking them. If you're lying, you're tricking them. So I'm happy that you have it. I'm happy that I'm able to give it. And I also want you to see, because it's important for you to see that some of your life will be something that you should take responsibility for, which you should. Some of your life was gifted to you. That's all of us. Some of our lives, we made choices, we sacrificed, and take credit. Don't take away a person's credit. But a big part of my life, I have no credit. For us, being frum is the biggest thing. I cannot take credit for it. I was born into it. We have chassidus. I did not discover chassidus. I did not go on a journey. For me, I'm talking about me. I was gifted to me. That I don't even appreciate the gift of it. I'm saying it was gifted. If a person grew up in a home and you had a roof over your head and you never went hungry as a kid, like all of that, it's important. That's the emes. Then you're not tricking. You're telling your kid what you're doing. And they'll be very happy to receive it from you. And they'll say thank you. They'll have a hard time saying thank you. I'm not talking about my kids, just for the record. My kids are special and amazing. And they were always grateful. But I'm talking about the concept of that we are not grateful enough. It's all relative, that we are not grateful enough. And we all have the experience that when something amazing happens at that moment, we become very grateful to God. And then I have to ask myself, why wasn't I grateful yesterday the same way? What's a joke? I'm healthy. We all have, and even if a person, God forbid, is not healthy, but we all have so many brachas. We all have some klipa. We don't acknowledge. We deny. We're in denial of us being a recipient. Okay. All right, guys.